Lyle, welcome to Beyond Reality Radio. Good to have you on the program.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. Lyle, of course, is an author, a cryptid researcher, and a musician. A lot of books to his credit, a lot of stories to his credit. And Lyle, we want to start by talking about the Lizard Man stories. Tell us what the origin is and what the legends are and what the sightings are.
Well, that one is one that's kind of always interested me. I've read plenty of cryptozoology books and often ran across an account from 1988 in which a young man in South Carolina claimed that he was attacked by an upright reptilian-type humanoid creature. And he was near a place called Skateboar Swamp when he had a flat tire late at night. And as he was finishing that up, that's when he saw the creature coming at him through a grassy area. And, of course, he jumped in the car and as he tried to get away, the thing jumped on the car and tried to get in. So obviously a very sensational encounter and one that had come across my radar, like I said. So when I finished up my Beast of Boggy Creek book, as I was looking for subjects to write about for the next one, I seemed to like these sort of swampy southern stories. So I actually went out to the place where that happened in Bishopville, South Carolina, to look into the case some more. So you had, that initial sensational encounter, which was investigated by the police. That made the news, and there was a lot of media coverage that went on there in the summer of 1988. And, of course, as in many of these cases, other people had sightings, after that date, and then others came forward saying that they had seen something fitting that description in the swamp, for several years prior. So it kind of built a bigger case that there was, possibly something down there in the Skateboar Swamp area. So the cool thing about this case is that the sheriff, Liston Truesdale, who was the sheriff of Lee County at the time, he sort of took the case seriously. Not that he believed necessarily there was a cryptid or a reptilian humanoid responsible, but as he interviewed these people, he was sure that, something happened, and he didn't want anybody to get hurt, whether that was, it turned out to be a bear or somebody playing a practical joke. No matter what it was, he wanted to follow through. So he actually had a lot of the witnesses write down their statements at the time, and he, the police were investigating these things, as they occurred. So in some of these older cryptid cases, you don't often have police records that you can look to. I mean, you'll have the newspaper reports and maybe you can interview a guy, but I've got witness statements from people that, wrote the encounters at the time.
And Lyle, and what you were saying, the police officer not sitting there saying that he truly believed in it, but he wanted to make sure nobody was going to get hurt, that of course he needs to be extremely cautious on, because the fact of the matter is, if it is somebody putting on a suit and doing this, let's be honest, you're in South Carolina. The people, people usually are carrying something with them in some of these areas, and that could be a situation where they pull out a gun, some sort of a rifle, and shoot somebody that's in a suit.
Oh, definitely. And I mean, I interviewed Sheriff Truesdale at length, and it's also written in the papers. I mean, once these things started getting in the media, and I mean, I'm talking serious media. There was CBS Morning News, ABC was there, People Magazine, CNN. This thing was just off the hook in the news. So that attracted a lot of, yahoos down there who thought they were going to go in the swamp and shoot it. So you did have people out there with guns running amok, and it, creates a nightmare for the police, and just on top of it being a monster case,
Well, and now this thing is reported to be 7+ feet tall and dark, hairy, and scaly. Very similar to some of the reports that have been talked about in Florida as well. In different areas, they've talked about seeing a lizard man, and it's similar to the same height and look.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, you've got kind of the Florida gator man type reports, and, there's some sporadic this reptilian type cryptid reports from, throughout North America, but Yeah, in general, it was, you know, described as being, you know, anthropomorphic, manlike, and upright. And, you know, some people said it, they thought it was greenish and had scaly skin. Some actually, you know, said it had hair and it looked brownish. So you just kind of have a, you know, sort of an enigma there on what is the true description. But obviously, like in most of these cases, you know, people see it running across the road. They see it in, you know, dusky, poor light conditions. So, you know, you're not getting a very good description. And the kid who was chased, I mean, obviously he's trying to get away with his life, not take a total assessment of the creature. So,
but they are seeing this thing moving around on two legs, standing upright, moving around on two legs.
Yes. Yeah, that was consistent throughout all the reports, that it was definitely upright on two legs. Often in the newspapers, they would kind of mock it up and they would draw a tail on it and it would end up looking a little more like a dinosaur. But
yeah, like Godzilla. You
know, yep. Yeah, you know, goofy. But, you know, if you look at the witness statements, they definitely, with the exception of, I think, one which said he thought it had a tail, most of them described it, you know, as just upright, no tail, manlike.
Okay. But there are certain skin diseases, and well, that I've actually dealt with some individuals who have it that can give the appearance of a scaly, extremely scaly, dry, scaly skin, and change around like that. What sort of evidence has been out there that you believe supports a lot of these claims?
Well, yeah, certainly. I mean, you can go with several theories as to what this might be. When you're dealing with a, you know, a reptilian humanoid, you're getting further out on the, you know, biological possibilities. I mean, you know, when you're dealing with something like Bigfoot, you know, it's ape-like and it's plausible. But yep. The you know, the reptilian, upright up reptilian, it's further out there. So you have, you know, it's more of a puzzle. But yeah, certainly a skin condition, a person with a skin condition is one explanation, and there are definitely extreme. You would look monstrous, and if I don't know why somebody would be down there in the swamps with that, but you know, stranger things have happened.
Come on, you know that as well as I do. So
exactly, but you know, and some of the reports, when, in my opinion, is either, you know, one of my theories was that it could have actually been a Bigfoot. If it was in a swampy area, if it was wet, nighttime, or, you know, it had a skin condition, obviously it would have looked big and it would have walked upright and, you know, looked brownish and greenish at the same time. It lives in the swamp. So it's not out of the question that we may be explaining one cryptid with another one, but, you know, that was something. And then of course, in these small town cases, you always have the people coming forward claiming credit for it. You know, it was a hoax. That was me. I was chasing the kid. And when you start dissecting those, though, it doesn't account for the, you know, for the scope of all the sightings. You know, it just didn't seem like it would be masterminded by somebody to have lasted for 4 or 5 years down there. It was not something that seemed to be a purposeful hoax, you know.
Well, but there's always going to be those individuals out there who will try to take credit for something, even though they had nothing to do with it, just in hopes of getting their name out there for 15 minutes of fame. And that's going to happen no matter where you are, whether you're in a small town or a big city, it happens. But I do understand what you're saying, where it could be, you know, it very well could be a Bigfoot sighting, just seen differently because its hair is all matted down. It's in a swamp. You've got high pollen. You've got high algae and all that stuff in the water. So of course you can get a greenish tint to the actual hair. It's plausible.
Yeah, and I always kind of stuck with the cryptid aspect of this case. You know, as you know, when you get into the reptilians, you can kind of go off into the, you know, extraterrestrial or underground dwellers and things like that. But, the fact was there was no UFO reports that corresponded with any of it. So you didn't have any of that. So you kind of had, well, it's down there in the swamp, and it seemed mostly cryptid-like, and therefore, the plausibility of it being a Bigfoot is certainly, one of the possible explanations.
And Jimmy and I were talking about that actually before we brought you on, and the underground dwellers. There is a lot of reports of these weird reptilian-type creatures that live underground and pop up just out of the blue and disappear as quick as they pop up. And I'm sure you've heard many reports of those.
Yeah, oh, certainly. Yeah, and in regards to that theory, I did investigate and research into the possibility of caves in that area, because obviously, okay, if they live underground, they're going to need an exit, and I did not find there is not a lot of caves there in this particular area of South Carolina, so that was sort of a—
So you are familiar with that sort of claim that's been out there for quite a long time, correct?
Sure. Oh, definitely. Yeah, I mean, I'm more of a cryptid investigator, and obviously that kind of starts getting into other territories, I'm definitely familiar with it. And I know in California that's kind of a hot spot for that sort of thing. And so certainly in a case like Lizard Man, it's something to look into. Are there caves? Are there places where creatures like that could come out of, from underground?
And there seemed to be no connection to any of that with these experiences.
No, there's no extensive cave system down there in this particular area. So, while, of course, there can be, it just takes a small, it would take a small exit area. So who knows? But, as far as I know, and there's no other connected, no one's ever said it's come up out of the ground or went back into a cave or anything like that. So there was really no connections to that.
They've just seen it mainly crossing the road and things like that. But
Lyle, you just said that when we start talking about these lizard men that may have an underground connection, you said that moves us into different territory. Are you talking about alien territory as opposed to cryptid?
Well, I suppose. I mean, get into the David Icke and theories of shape-shifting and races of, a whole race of people who can manage to live underground or have perceived intelligence beyond, your basic animal. So, I think, it does start to move into those areas where it kind of crosses over. I mean, I guess all subjects, even Bigfoot, you've got all kinds of theories. But, for me, I just sort of looked at it as, here's the sightings, here's the cool story, here's how it all developed, and let's investigate the possibilities of what this thing could be. And, not finding caves, it just sort of ended up, at a dead end there. So,
yeah. I want to get back to the police officer that actually you've seemed to have some respect for. Now, I just want to clarify, he didn't have a sighting or an experience himself, right?
Right. The Sheriff Truesdale, he was, Lee County is, a small rural county there in South Carolina, and he was sheriff there for many years. But he did have some extensive training, even FBI training. So he was a qualified police investigator, not just a total podunk town type of thing. And the way he actually was drawn into this was kind of interesting, because the first thing that came on the radar prior to the young man coming forward about the attack is the sheriff's office got a call from some folks who lived down by Skateboard Swamp, and they said, we've had a problem down here. It looks like something has literally chewed up our car, like an animal has attacked our car. And so Sheriff Truesdale sent a couple of deputies down there and said, check this out. Well, they go down there, and it's sure enough, this car is looks like it's been chewed up. There's hair and fur and tracks all over the place, and it looked very bizarre. So they called Sheriff Truesdale and said, you might want to come check this out. We don't know what to make of it. So when Truesdale goes down there and starts looking at it, trying to figure out what was going on. You know, were the people trying insurance fraud? Just what was it? And locals started gathering around. You know, the police were there, and so a few of them said, "Well, maybe it was the Lizard Man." And Sheriff Truesdell said, "The Lizard Man? What do you mean?" And that's when they said, "Well, some folks down here have seen this brown or green, 7-foot-tall thing near the swamp. And maybe that's the connection." And so that was the first time Sheriff Truesdell had heard the term Lizard Man. And that was just something that the people, you know, just a name the people had given it. And that's when, he said, "Well, you know, I would like to know more about this. If somebody has seen it, please come to my office." And then it was a couple of weeks later when the young man, Christopher Davis, who had the incident where he was attacked when he had the flat tire, when he showed up and said something, tried to attack him, then the police were like, "Okay, something's definitely going on here. You know, this isn't, the possibility that somebody's trying something, or we have a dangerous animal in the area." That kind of put Truesdell on the case to pursue it seriously.
Lyle, you may have answered this in the last segment, but if you did, I missed it. How recent have there been sightings of this creature in that area?
The last sighting was around 1992. So we're looking at roughly from 1986 to 1992 is when the flap of all these sightings occurred. Now, within that, the strange and possibly connected or possibly not connected were the car maulings and incidents, in which the police did find that it appeared that animals did actually damage these cars. Now, we had one of those as recent as 2011. And every time that happens, of course, everybody says, the Lizard Man. But really, there's been no credible sightings since the 90s. And there have been people who have come forward with videos and other things, but, you know, I've looked into those, and they were definitely fake and, you know, just hokey. And so there's really no credible sightings since then. So it's kind of a very concentrated case where you had this massive media coverage. You had all these hubbub and the sightings, and the police were, you know, involved, and then it just simply dissipated, you know.
Yeah. Our guest is Lyle Blackburn. We've spent most of this hour talking about the legend, or the story of the Lizard Man, as the topic of one of his books. And we were talking about the sheriff that was actually involved in following up on some of the reports of the sightings. Did the sheriff, Lyle, ever write anything officially that would lend, in your estimation, support to the claim that this was some type of cryptid creature versus he just couldn't explain it?
No, I think he always kept the stance that, he's open to the possibility, but, you know, without seeing it himself, he would never come out and say that, you know, it was absolutely an unknown animal. And I spent quite a bit of time because, you know, the way I like to do my books and my research, I mean, I went out there and I stayed in Bishopville for a while, and I, you know, went to Sheriff Truesdell's house many times, and we talked over and over about the case. And, you know, I felt, confident that, you know, he looked into it as best he could, and he didn't make any judgments that, you know, he just only based on the evidence, you know, and he just never had seen it himself. And there had been some tracks that had been found, which he didn't find all too credible. So based on what he had to work with, he couldn't say it was one thing or another, you know.
Well, Lyle, were there ever any pictures taken of the damage to the vehicle? Was there any evidence gathered from that? And even right down to, I know that some officers like to just draw out diagrams of the damage created, or anything over the years like that that might be able to help prove the existence of this?
Well, he certainly took photos of all the vehicles that were damaged. I mean, the first one in 88, and the subsequent ones in the 2000s. You have plenty of pictures, and you know, Sheriff Truesdale, I mean, he has had these stacks of photos of the scenes, the places where the stuff had happened. He took me, you know, on site, and so I, in my book, I mean, I have pictures of all that stuff because I actually scanned his whole files.
So it's in the book, but is it also anywhere online for just anybody to be able to view, or is it mainly in the just in the book?
It's out there somewhat because in especially in the later cases, the news covered it. So you can actually find news reports like live news broadcasts that are on the sites to look at. And I've got a Bishop de Lizarin Facebook page where I've actually posted, you know, color photos and stuff where people can look at them, you know, better. Because obviously the book, I mean, if it's black and white, so, you know, it's a way for me to post things that people can see in a...
Oh, great. Okay, so they can see them right on the Facebook page. All right, because that's something I was definitely interested in trying to check out. So
in those later cases, you know, now we have the availability of DNA, so the Sheriff Truesdale was retired at the time, but the sheriff that was in office, he actually ran some DNA on the car, and it came back as canine. Now, you know, some of the theories were that these could have been dogs, and people said coyotes and alligators. I mean, they had every strange scenario, but the people who said that, the people whose car it was damaged, they said it, the reason they think it came back is canine is because there was some blood on there and the neighbor's dogs had come over there and licked it. And so that obviously contaminated the test. And even at that, many people thought there is no way that this type of damage could have been done by dogs. It just was simply too extensive. I mean, the whole bumper's ate up. There's pieces of metal bent. You know, eating.
Well, and I'm looking at the pictures right now. There's three of them on one of the Facebook pages that you have there. And yeah, there's a white car that it just looks like something's been gnawing on the side. There's also a blue Caravan, which it looks like something's definitely scraped up the whole front. And then a red car where some of the molding's been ripped off. So yeah, it doesn't look like something a canine would do. But then again, looking at it, especially from a guy who spent 15 years working on cars, I would think that something 7 feet tall would create more damage than what is being seen on these vehicles, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I think if it had the intention of tearing up a vehicle, yeah, it could definitely do more damage. And that was the thing about the bizarre aspect of this case. There was never a instance in which a car was eaten up and that corresponded with a sighting of the creature. You know, no, there was never there at the same time. So it was strange that you had these bizarre car things, and they're definitely, I mean, these people definitely weren't doing it to their own cars. I mean, they're, you know, fairly honest people, and it was investigated by the police. So to me, it's almost not necessarily connected with the Lizard Man, but just puts this whole bizarre thing going on in Bishopville that's recurred, you know, been recurring over the years, that it's just a very strange mystery. So I never really thought it was the Lizard Man that did it, but certainly a strange aspect.
So Lyles, as this story progresses and you decided to investigate it to write your book, what were the key components of eyewitness accounts that you felt had the most credibility to them?
Well, you know, the initial case of Christopher Davis saying that he was attacked and having, you know, discussed that with the sheriff who interviewed him, you know, like he was, I was certain that something happened to this kid. I mean, there was no part about it that he was making something up. The kid was scared, something had occurred. So, you know, that put it into the realm of physical possibilities, you know. And then there was some, you know, the backstory of some of the people that came forward after the fact and said they had seen something. They were longtime residents and, you know, deemed to be upstanding citizens and, you know, presumably wouldn't lie. That added to it. And then for me, there was a guy who was a crop duster in the area who saw it from his plane. And I was able to interview this guy, and I felt he was very truthful about it. And then the witnesses who had seen it later that had made written statements, but that was the gold right there. I can tell you those people definitely, something came up into the road and came at their car, no question about it. So again, it's, you know, it kind of just boils down to it was a strange creature, or it was a person in a very good suit who had been down there for years, you know, perpetrating this hoax, which just doesn't seem plausible. So, you know, based on those witnesses that had occurred over a, you know, roughly a 6-year period, I found that there was quite a few of those that were good, solid witnesses. And, you know, just for me, it's just a very interesting story when you, you know, combine the sightings, you combine the law investigation, just the whole story of it is really a cool story, all in all, you know.
Oh, absolutely. But now, also, is there certain areas that it seem, I mean, certain times of the year that this seem, it seemed more prominent for this thing to show itself?
There's not enough sightings to develop too much of a pattern. It was somewhat sporadic, but it seemed like there's, over the spring and summer, that seemed to be the primary times
would, when it comes down to being some sort of a reptilian or reptile in general, that would be more of the time where they would be out seeing, they're cold-blooded and they need to be out in the warmth of the sun, though most of these reports are at night, correct?
Yes, all of them, except for the crop duster. He saw it in the early morning hours as he was, you know, flying over the area. So, but yeah, generally at night. But, you're right, in the warmest time of the year.
Yeah, which would be the ideal time, though, yeah, most reptiles need usually sun to, yeah. So it's definitely confusing, and it makes you sit there and truly wonder what it could possibly be.
Right, and I'll add this. This was one thing I found when I went out there. And I went to the local, there's a South Carolina Cotton Museum, and fortunately the curator there takes a great interest in legends and even the Lizard Man case, and he had compiled some stuff. And I discovered that in the area, when the Native Americans were living there, coincidentally, they had reports of a race of men, as they loosely put, who were scaly and had tails, short tails. They called them sharp tails. These weren't like long, you know, reptilian tails, but some sort of a bizarre bony tail formation. But basically they described them as men who had scales and they ate fish. Now this was something that had to be you had to dig to find this information. And it's very coincidental because the witnesses, for example, this young man, Christopher Davis, I mean, there is no way he would have known that legends like that in the area existed. You know, if, for example, he's trying to make something up. It was an aspect for me which was kind of eerie, because you have these old reports dating back to Native American times that describe a very similar creature that people saw in modern times.
Right. Lyle, I want to change the subject just a little bit to you, because I'm interested in as to how you got interested in chasing down some of these stories and how long you've been doing it.
Well, it's one of those things, you know, I've always had an interest in cryptids at a very early age. I loved horror movies and things like that, but there was something about when I first saw the Patterson film, for example, that really spooked me, you know, the possibility that a creature like that could be living amongst us out in the woods. And sometime when I was young, I had the pleasure of seeing a movie called The Legend of Boggy Creek in a drive-in theater, and that really hit it home for me, because I'm from Texas, and prior to that, obviously the Loch Ness Monster is very far away. The Pacific Northwest is far away, but the stories from Boggy Creek happened about 3 hours from where I lived, just across the border into Arkansas. So that was something that, you know, I was always fascinated with. Fast forward years later, I started writing for a horror magazine called Rue Morgue, and I was, you know, I'd been studying cryptid for quite a while, and they wanted to incorporate somebody who had that kind of knowledge. So when I started writing for Rue Morgue and writing about cryptids, that's when I really started doing some more serious research. And that's actually what led to me writing The Beast of Boggy Creek at the time. So, you know, I've always sort of been a, you know, I've grown up as a hunter and been in the woods all my life, but it really is, you know, only in the last, you know, 6 to 7 years that I've been doing this in a serious fashion, researching and obviously writing the book. So, you know, it's been sort of a process, a slow process coming around.
Well, and for all the listeners out there listening to the show, The Legend of Boggy Creek was it was made in 1972. They made it for about $100,000, and it's made upwards of $20 million at this point in the box office on DVD and so forth. And you know, it's a neat little movie about the whole legend of the Boggy Creek, the creature out there. So I don't know. It's one of those ones that you got to go in with an open mind and just have fun. But it's neat.
Lyle, how closely did the film Legend of Boggy Creek stick to the actual stories and the sightings and the firsthand accounts of that incident?
Quite close, actually. You know, obviously the movie, it's a horror film, and it does, you know, dramatize the sightings and put spooky music behind it. But at the core, the director, Charles Pierce, had seen, in 1971, he started seeing reports of this so-called Falk monster, who was being seen down in this little town of Falk in southern Arkansas. And when he went down there to do the movie, he sort of started in with the idea of doing a documentary, which kind of switched into doing a feature film. But the way he did this was using, in many cases, the actual witnesses to reenact the encounters. So this, he was doing what, you know, we see on Monster Quest and countless other shows today, but he was doing this, filming it in 1971. And that gave the movie a certain realism. And he really didn't have to make very much up, because he just dramatized the sightings as the people had reported them. I mean, he kind of condensed it into a shorter time period, but ultimately it did reflect what people had reported seeing.
And for folks who don't know, and we have talked about the Boggy Creek story on this program before, but for people who don't know what that story is, Lyle, why don't you go ahead and just kind of lay the groundwork?
Okay. Basically, in a nutshell, in May of 1971, a family who had come into Falk, and they had lived there for about a week, they had come down there and moved into a rent house, started experiencing some strange circumstance. Something was creeping around the house at night, and from what they could see, they thought it was some sort of an upright, man-like creature covered in hair. And so this kind of culminated into a Saturday night in which the men of the home confronted this thing and went out and onto the porch. It ran to the woods, and they attempted to shoot it. Then they went out to see if they had hit it, looking for blood or any evidence. And at this time, one of the guys, Bobby Ford, got spooked, started heading back to the house. And at that point, he was attacked by something, you know, conceivably this creature, and he ended up in the Texarkana hospital. Now, this kind of leaked out in the news, and this became a, you know, one of those media things. And similar to the Lizardman case, it brought forth others that had seen it prior. There were subsequent sightings, and this was all going on, you know, in a short time period. And the old timers who had lived there were, you know, they were citing incidents dating back at least a decade, if not two or three, sporadic sightings of a man-like, Bigfoot-like creature in the area. And the papers gave it the name the Falk Monster, named after the little town of Falk. And so Charles Pierce, the director, ultimately, of The Legend of Boggy Creek, saw this stuff in the paper, came down, made the movie. The movie came out in 1972, and it was huge. I mean, it had a lot of buzz, obviously, in the area. But ultimately, once it went on to play in the drive-in theater and movie circuits and on television, like you said, it made millions. It was basically the Blair Witch Project of its time. It was that sort of real film, and it scared many people, you know, in its way back in the 70s. So that kind of made this a very famous Southern Sasquatch case. You know, I mean, there's plenty of Southern Sasquatch sightings, but Boggy Creek just had that ambiance and obviously a famous movie. So, you know, that was the thing. And when I started researching to write the book, I thought I would be writing a historical book. What I found was that there had been sightings all along. They continue, and they continue right up until today, that they just weren't publicized once the newspapers and everything sort of moved on. You know, the movie had played out, and it just sort of faded. But if you go into that town, and like I did my research, I found that this is a continuing story that's going on.
You're actually involved in pretty much doing another documentary on the Boggy Creek Monster, correct?
Correct. Yes, I've teamed up with a film company called Small Town Monsters, who've done a couple of previous cryptid type documentaries, and you know, they put their sights on Boggy Creek. So they brought me in as not only a consultant, but to be featured in the film. And of course, I've, you know, been doing this research closely with the people of the town. So, you know, I was facilitated basically the making of the film, and it's going to be called The Boggy Creek Monster, and it's set to debut later this year. So we're very excited about that. And in some ways, to me, it was sort of like an updated Legend of Boggy Creek. Now, while we're not making a horror movie, the whole case is spooky unto itself, and even a documentary kind of has that vibe. So it's kind of come full circle that I'm sort of immersed into the legend now, so to speak, which is amazing.
Now, the Small Town Monster series, for folks who've been listening to the program, we had Seth Breedlove on the show, I think it was last week, and he's the director, writer you're talking about, Lyle, who his first feature film, I believe, in the series was The Minerva Monster. We talked about that last week as well. So you said the Boggy Creek sightings continue basically up until today. And, you know, I guess the big question is there photographic evidence? Is there anything that's showing up because of the advancement of technology and the fact that people have smartphones in their pocket that can take great pictures that is helping substantiate anything? Of this, or are we still relying on just personal accounts?
Yeah, we're still at personal accounts, and that's one of the odd things about this case. There's never been a photo. Now, I've heard rumors of thereof. You know, I chase down these leads. So and so's got one, and you know, a game camera. I never have come across one. So, unfortunately, you know, there's never been any photos. Now, that being said, you know, any sighting that happens up there, I'm pretty much involved in it and have investigated some really, really good ones over the last couple of years. And in most of those cases, they were locals who it just wasn't really feasible to get a photo. You know, it was a situation. It was dark. It was quick. It was this or that. And so I can kind of see why, at least in these cases, you know, they're not able to, you know, pull out a smartphone, open the app and get it up there and take a picture, you know, in a poorly lit area. You know, hopefully somebody would come up with a photo. There's been footprints, you know, we've got footprint casts and things like that. So there is some you know, circumstantial outlying evidence such as that, but no photo to date.
Have you spent any time actually, whether it's in the woods or wherever you would actually go investigate to try to get a sighting of your own, do you do that as well, or do you kind of keep yourself to talking to the others who've had an encounter and documenting those and writing the books?
No, I do. Yeah, I do go to areas myself. I mean, I've always been kind of an outdoorsman and do enjoy getting out, and certainly would love to have my own sighting. And so, yeah, I mean, part of my scope is investigative journalism, where I interview people and document these things and write the books. But at the same time, I do go into this area. And of course, I live close to Falk, and I'm you know, just a total geek on the Legend of Boggy Creek. So I've gone down there and I've located all the places that were in the movie. I've been in the woods, all in those bayous, Mercer Bayous, Sulphur River. So I've immersed myself in that environment, and you know, hopefully it may pay off one day with my own sighting. I don't know if I'm lucky.
Well, I've got to ask you, we've talked about Boggy Creek Monster, we've talked about Lizard Man. What other stories or legends or sightings or whatever you want to call it are on your radar that you're kind of keeping tabs on these days?
Well, I've just actually completed a manuscript for a new book, and that encompasses a wider range of Southern Bigfoot stories. So, you know, I suppose primarily I've been following, you know, Bigfoot cases all across the Deep South, and I've done that for years. It seems lately there has been some strange, like, actually Lizard Man type sightings that I've followed here in Texas. There's been a couple, oddly enough, and lately looking into some of the Dogman sightings. I just recently participated in a event in Ohio called the Dogman Symposium, and so I've always been interested in the sort of a Dogman phenomenon, so I've been looking into some of those. So there's always, you know, a long list of cryptids I'm looking into, definitely.
Now, is there a long report of sightings of this Lizard Man in the Texas area? Is this just something new that just came out?
In one case, just, you know, sort of a brief sighting in southeast Texas a woman had, in which I'm still trying to follow up on that one. But there was another one that at first seemed to be more urban legend, so to speak. It was a sighting which was more in, it was a small town, but it was still more in town. And myself and Ken Gerhard, one of my cryptid research friends here from Texas, we went down to this small town and looked into it, and it turns out there was more to it. So there was multiple people who had a sighting of a creature that we're still trying to find out if it's, you know, again, if reptilian, is it a Bigfoot, is it something else? But people were calling this 911 operator, who actually got in touch with me and told me the whole story. So we've been down there once, and we're going to head down there again to follow up on this, because like in any of these cases, when you go to the town and you start talking to people, you know, one person will refer you to another. So we're kind of piecing together the story, but it's definitely a unique one in that, you know, you just don't have a lot of Lizard Man type creature sightings in Texas. There's just not a lot of long history of that. So it's interesting to hear any of those. So we're kind of following up on those right now.
I want to know more about the stuff you do for Rue Morgue, because you mentioned it's cryptid related, but it's a horror magazine. Is this fiction, or are you writing about real life accounts?
No, it's real life. The way that kind of worked, in like I said, I guess in some ways, especially because my first book, The Beast of Boggy Creek, also, you know, involves a cryptid-based horror movie. So having known the guys from Rue Morgue, you know, like I said, I'm fans of the horror movies, but also knowing the aspects of real-life cryptid cases, it was sort of a perfect thing for me to review, which is often a glut of Bigfoot horror movies or just cryptid-inspired horror movies, because, I know the aspects of both sides, the actual cryptid cases. So In my column in the magazine, I do write about just literally cryptids. It's not fiction, you know. It's just a chance for me to sort of talk about cryptids and that subject to an audience that, you know, probably doesn't know as much about cryptids, although they're very interested in them for the monstrous aspect. But I've been putting together a book. RumeWorks doing a series of library edition books in which I get to explore the gamut of the influence of cryptozoological creatures on cinema, which is kind of cool. It's just that merging of the real life encounters influencing, film. So that's, one of the things I like to write about, and was nice to have the opportunity to do a book through RumeWorks.
You said that you were a horror movie fan, and obviously working with RumeWorks would indicate that's true. Have you seen and do you have any fondness for any of the recent films that have been released? Because there seems to be a rash of found footage films related to Bigfoot hitting Netflix or some of these other, streaming channels. Have you seen any of those, and do you think any of them have a real handle on what the Bigfoot thing's all about?
Yes, I've definitely seen them. It's almost part of my job is to have to view these, and yes, right. Most of them are horrendous, and, some of them are based on reality, some are ridiculous. Some of the better films that I like exists, directed by Eduardo Sanchez.
That was one that I saw that I thought was pretty good, too, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, definitely well done, well-crafted. Now, the reality of it, you've always got to have sort of a angry Bigfoot, and, you do have some of those accounts. It's very, very similar to The Legend of Boggy Creek, and I think that is a good film. It was well done. Bobcat Goldthwait, of all people, directed one called Willow Creek, which is sort of another found footage thing, and it's on the subject of Bigfoot, quite a different perspective, which I thought was fresh and different. Let's see, there was a new one called Stomping Ground, which was pretty good. Then there's been just like Bigfoot War, which is totally horrendous. So you just get the gamut.
Hey, Lyle, you've been all over the place looking for these things. You said you haven't had any experience, I think, with the Boggy Creek monster itself. But have you had any success anywhere where you've actually had firsthand witnessing something like that? Or are you still relying on most of the encounters that other folks have had?
Yeah, for visual encounters, I've never seen anything. I have heard a howl, which currently can't be identified. It was myself and the guy who does a lot of research with me, and that was in the Boggy Creek area. And it was a howl that, while I can't be sure it was the creature, I'm fairly positive it wasn't anything that can be identified. So right. That was one experience. And we've also found what we believe might be a partial track. It was partially in the water, but appeared to have toes and that sort of thing. So, there's been a couple of close calls like that, that have come about, but nothing visual so
okay.
far.
Well, let's go to the phone lines. We have Jay in Florida who wants to share a question with us. Jay, welcome to Beyond Reality Radio. You're on with Jason, JV, and Lyle Blackburn.
Hey, good morning, guys. How you doing?
Great, thank you.
Good. Welcome to the show.
Okay, so this is a question for all three of you, more so your guests, but I didn't know if you guys would have any knowledge of it. I was wondering, let's say since we entered the time of, which to put an exact time on it would be suspect, but of revelations, and so let's say we're in the middle of the six or seven seals now, which I know, according to someone, when George Bush was in office, that was probably the second seal with the red horse to put a perspective on the time. But I was wondering, since that time, and especially more so since they pretty much supposedly opened the gates of hell in Switzerland earlier this summer, I believe it was in June, if there's been a rise on any of these creatures that have been seen or other maybe interdimensional beings or things literally from hell, and especially even worldwide, because I believe that it's going to affect elsewhere more than so here in the U.S. and the Canada, because we are, as they say, the children of the Father and where the light still is. And we're probably Babylon, and Babylon will fall. And that will come after it has worldwide. Like, the Queen has came out, you know, and she has said, and this is, there's YouTube videos and there's an article about it. She has literally admitted she's not human, and you have to deal with it.
Well, great question, Jay. Let's see what, yeah, go ahead,
well,
Jay.
Well, you know, first off, and it's funny that you say that, because I've seen a bunch of reports on, you know, Obama not being human and the Queen, and whether that's true or not, I have no idea. But I will say that with your question there, I have, over the last 2 years, seen more claims of demonic-type haunts and or just violent-type hauntings than I have in the 20-some-odd years that I've been involved in the field prior. Now, are they all legit? I cannot say yes or no on that, but I can say that the amount of calls that I've been sent to by the church has skyrocketed. The amount of emails or people trying to make contact with me due to the negative type hauntings has skyrocketed. So a lot has really changed in the last couple years. Now, as for
real quick, but I didn't know if you guys were going to hang up. I wanted to ask you, had you guys tried the thing with where you put the magnet to the third eye to exorcise people and cleanse them? Are you familiar with that method?
No, I'm not. So and I have not. No.
Okay, I did that to myself after actually hearing it on Coast to Coast. A guy called and said anyone can do it, and I did it, and I've done it twice, and it is amazing how well it works.
Okay. I want to get Lyle's take. Yeah, I want to get Lyle's take on the caller's question. Jay was kind of, I mean, we've heard the alien cryptid connection, but now we're talking about a religion cryptid connection. Anything ring true about that to you, Lyle?
I mean, you know, it sort of lost me at the revelation stuff, but I mean, just, I mean, talking about a possible increase in sightings, it's hard to say. I mean, it does seem like there is an increase in cryptid sightings, but, you know, it could literally be because of the internet. I mean, the ease in which people report, and the fact that nowadays you're not necessarily considered crazy. I mean, everybody seems to have seen something. You've got, you know, shows like Finding Bigfoot that say, you know, a lot of people have seen it. So I don't know, but there's been a lot of sightings of a recent flap of dogmen sightings, and dogmen seem fairly spooky. And, you know, I don't know. You know, that's one thing. But who knows if it's connected. But, yeah, definitely there seems to be a rise of sightings.
Jay, does that help you out at all?
Thank you.
All right. Thanks for the call.
Jay, thank you for the call.
Yeah, and the thought-provoking question. That was a great question. Thanks so much. Lyle, before we let you go here, because we don't have a whole lot longer left with you, where can people get a hold of more information about you, more information about your books, and your other projects?
The best place would be to visit my website, which would be lyleblackburn.com, L-Y-L-E-Blackburn.com. And from there, you know, you can jump off to some of my other sites. It's obviously got links to my books there. My books can be found on Amazon and Barnes & Nobles, and they come in Kindle and ebook and all the flavors thereof. I've also got a site dedicated to the Boggy Creek case, which is Fouke Monster, FOUKEMonster.net. But all those you can access from lyleblackburn.com. So definitely visit there. And if you have had an encounter that you'd like to share or pertinent to my research, definitely send me an email.
Well, and Lyle, you're going to be at Dragon Con the end of this month, correct?
Correct. Yeah, I've got some appearances coming up. Be a guest at Dragon Con doing some panels on cryptids. And that's like September 2nd through the 5th in Atlanta, Georgia. Following that, end of September, there's a Bigfoot conference in Homebee, Oklahoma, and then the big 15th annual original Texas Bigfoot conference on October 15th. So some good stuff coming up.
Thanks, Lyle, for joining us on the program and sharing your stories with us. We really appreciate the insight and your time.
Definitely. Thanks for having me on, guys.
All right, let's go to Tim in Pennsylvania, who wants to discuss what Jason was talking about, the sonic boom or whatever the noise was near Hazleton, Pennsylvania. Welcome, Tim, to the program.
Well, how you doing? I mean, what I'm calling about, I wanted to see if I get any more information about this, because I live and I work right in this area.
Oh, really?
I haven't heard nothing.
You haven't heard anything on it, huh?
No, and that my friends and everything, like, we have our own paranormal, my own paranormal group and everything. And
wow.
I'm working right up near the Wilkes-Barre Airport right now, security doing, and like I said, I heard you say that on the radio, and I'm like, what's going on? What time was this about Sunday?
All right, so it was at 12:15 a.m. Sunday. Residents across Hazleton area reported experiencing what sounded like and felt like a sonic boom, rattling windows and echoing like an explosion. According to a bunch of residents out there, they were calling the police departments and the fire department and stuff of that nature. They say the noise went viral on social media, drawing theories and concerns from residents as to what might have caused such a boom.
It's so weird because at that time we had really bad weather because I left to go up to Williamsport to work. I work armed security, and I left to go to Williamsport around that time, and the weather was so bad up here. Like, is there a certain part of town that it's in, or was it part, like you said, windows got broke?
Well, no, they said the windows were rattling and the whole houses were shaking, and it was mainly in Hazleton. I received an email from a lady, Angela, who says that she heard the boom, the whole house shook, and it sounded like it came from the ground up. So, but it's interesting that you're saying that a big storm was starting to come through because
weird that if anything was in the air, the Little League World Series in Williamsport, they actually canceled the Little League World Series, or postponed it to yesterday, Sunday. They have the blimp in the air all the time, but when I got to Williamsport, that blimp wasn't in the air because of the weather.
Well, and Hazleton Fire Chief Don Olesko said that we've heard people talking about this explosion, but there's nothing that we're sure of at this time. And but it makes me wonder, if you're saying a storm was coming in, of course there's always the possibility lightning hitting something, whether it be a transformer creating a large explosion, because one of the thoughts somebody said was they were wondering if it was a transformer that exploded, creating that sound as well. So they really weren't sure because nobody had any details, but I'm sure if a transformer exploded, you'd know it because tons of houses would be without power.
Right. And the goofiest thing, like, I didn't hear thunder, but I mean, it really stormed because I was on my way up to Williamsport around that time. And like I said, no one has said anything to me about anything.
Well, and many local residents
hear about this, but
it also says that many local residents were also citing the smell of sulfur, something common in a methane related incidents. So,
now let me explain. There's a lot of mines out here. There's a lot of stuff going on. There's a lot of people. There's a lot of construction and all kinds of stuff going on here.
Yeah.
On 81. 81 actually goes right through on the other side of Hazleton. I don't know what's going. I mean, last night when I came up to work, I got off the Pittston exit. It's right before the Wilkes-Barre exit, and they have like a bunch of construction. I mean, imagine on a Sunday afternoon, nothing would be going on. I mean, that's just kind of strange.
Well, remember, it's not a Sunday afternoon. It's a Sunday night at 12:15 a.m. So it was just after midnight that it happened. And some of the thoughts are that sonic boom from a plane, meteor exploding in the atmosphere, a high tension power line breaking, and also some people say that possibly an ignition of methane gas gas pocket at a site of the Jeansville mine fire, I guess, burning underground in Banks Township.
I know that's towards the east side. I would highly doubt that would be that. Now, you're saying at 12:15 Sunday morning, it would be early Sunday morning, like over from Saturday night into
Sunday
morning.
Yes, 12:15 a.m. Sunday.
Sunday morning. Well, that time, the weather was calm.
I was actually up.
I live about 10 miles from Hazleton South, and I didn't hear anything.
And Tim, you said you're part of a paranormal group?
I was. I mean, I'm still with the Pennsylvania UFO Society.
Okay.
I don't know if you know Butch. Everybody usually knows Butch when they talk about
I've heard of Butch, but you're with the UFO Society. So you guys kind of have your fingers on the pulse of any extraterrestrial or UFO sightings or reports in that area, I would imagine.
I just try to call him, and I guess he's sleeping. I was waiting to find out, but like, I don't know if he knows anything. I just talked to him last night, and he didn't mention anything.
Yeah, you know, we'd be really interested in knowing if anybody in that UFO group in your area has any more information about this. So,
well, I'll tell you, I'll tell you what, I leave here at 7 o'clock and I'm off for 3 days, and I want to jump on this story like quick.
Yeah, because like I said,
it doesn't make any sense at that time of night.
Yeah.
Even you said about the mine over there, they wouldn't be. I know my one friend, his dad works there. Where you're saying, I know this whole area, and I'm connected with all these people.
Well, and that's the thing.
Weird.
It's like
weird that doesn't make any sense.
Well, yeah, like you're saying, you didn't hear anything, but this lady Angela who sent me an email says that she had heard the boom, her whole house shook, and it sounded like it came from the ground up instead of the sky down. But there's also, it's made it to the point where the Hazleton fire chief, Donald Leshko, actually had to respond about it because they had gotten so many calls on trying to figure out what had happened, and they're just not sure, so... It's
weird.
Well,
if you don't have an address to that lady's like place, because like Hazleton's kind of really sparsely out.
Yeah,
that way we could have maybe we could get a location on that.
Yeah, you know what? Well, I'm sure she must be listening to the show right now because I talked about it. If she wants to email me her address, fine. But yeah, and we could go from there.
Yeah, tell you what. Don't hang up, Tim. We'll have Slick Eddie or Alex get an email address or something from you.
Okay,
definitely. You know,
and I'll jump on this in the next 3 days, and we'll try to figure out what went on here.
Yeah, absolutely. And we'd love a call back if you find out anything on it.
Oh, definitely.
That's great, Tim. We appreciate you calling in very much.
All right, thank you.
Okay, so that's interesting. So Tim is actually part of a UFO group in the Hazleton, Pennsylvania area, and at this point he hasn't heard anything from any of his other group members.
But how do we know that Tim wasn't abducted? It's not really Tim now. It's an alien in his body, and he's covering the tracks.
That could be the problem.
That could be.
We're gonna have to have some kind of alien detector test on these phone lines. How do we do that? All right. Well, it's about the end of the program here, and we want to thank all of our callers and our guests, Lyle Blackburn and Slick Eddie and Alex, and all the people in the chat room. Thanks so much for making it another great night of Beyond Reality Radio. Thanks for listening. It's Beyond Reality Paranormal. We'll see you next time.
The night may be long and the dark may be deep, but the answers are there to be found. Whether it's the normal, the abnormal, or the paranormal, you're in the right place. Let's go beyond reality.
And another great program lined up, Jay, tonight. We've got Lyle Blackburn. We're going to be talking cryptids, one of our favorite topics.
Yeah, and I'm really interested also in the whole story behind the Lizard Man.
I guess we'll take a break, and when we come back, we'll bring Lyle Blackburn in, and we'll talk cryptids. Hey, gang, it's JV here. We hope you're enjoying this episode of Beyond Reality Radio. Some of you are new to the program, and some of you have been with us for years. And no matter if you're interested in ghosts, the UFO phenomenon, conspiracy discussions, or any of the other topics we explore on this program, we do it for you. Our goal here is to help find answers to some of the world's most enduring mysteries. And as we continue to bring you interviews and discussions each night, it's important that we get your feedback and, even more importantly, your support. The media landscape is forever changing, and as it does, we need to be able to change with it. That's why it's important for you, right now, to go to our YouTube channel and subscribe. Once on YouTube, just search for JV Johnson. You'll find it there. Subscribe. It's all free, and it'll make you part of our global community. In addition, Beyond Reality Radio is available as a podcast. Go to your favorite podcast platform and search for Beyond Reality Radio and subscribe there as well. And finally, we have an archive program that you may enjoy as well. This show can be found on major podcast platforms, and it's called Beyond Reality Paranormal. By supporting us in one or all of those places, you can be sure we'll be able to continue to deliver quality shows to you, no matter what form the media landscape takes. As a paranormal historian, I promise you the best and most entertaining conversations as we continue to hunt for the truth.